the Wildlife Observer Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Onward for Wildlife. Today we're going onward with Joelle Jenkins. She is majoring in environmental and sustainability studies with a minor in biology Africana studies. If you've seen her around campus at the University of Northern Colorado, go Bears, you'll see that she has a passion for ecology, environmental science, and multicultural studies. And that has led her to opportunities to serve as the Green Team Coordinator, Public Affairs Officer, and eventually the President of the Student Leadership for Environmental Action Fund, aka Student LEAF. Also at UNC, she is the Benedict Ornithology Lab Illustrator and Graphic Designer. And after finishing undergrad, she hopes to get her master's or PhD in psychology with a goal in pursuing a career in environmental psychology after she's finished school. Fun fact about Joelle, her favorite animal is a spotted hyena because of their social structure is one of the most unique of the entire animal kingdom. Very happy to have you on. And could you start by describing that unique social structure?
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm happy to be here. So hyenas, their social structure is maternal. So females like are dominant. And there's a lot of arguments with how the social structure set up, like inheritance, like the inheritance of like, what is it? How do I say this? There's different positions within a clan. So the most dominant female, there's like an argument saying like her offspring would inherit the dominance. You know, it's genetic, but there's other arguments saying like, you know, you can change your role within a clan by fighting with other conspecifics. So yeah, there's much more to that, but I don't want to get too crazy into this. So.
Oh, no, that's totally fine. And it's good to always have fun facts about wildlife. I understand that you started as a bio major. Did you go that route because of wildlife?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've always loved animals. And I didn't know what field I wanted to go into specifically. Then I kind of narrowed it down. I wanted to be like a cetologist, ornithologist, or study like hyenas. So...
Okay, that's good. Well, I understand you declared biology and switched your major to what it is now. What made you change?
So I was in a environmental chemistry in the environment class. And for one of our assignments, we were told to watch Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. And as a biology major at the time, I hated how everything was so objective because I found myself constantly, you know, as a Black person, it's hard not to think about social justice. And so watching Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth first solidified my project for McNair, but then it also kind of showed me that, yes, I need to switch to environmental and sustainability studies because they look at both the objective and the subjective.
Wow, that is very well said. And I think that, well, personally, I want to say I'm a big fan of Black-led research, and your pinned tweet is a gem. Aspects of identity that inform Black college students' experiences and consideration of the natural environment. And I think your research is a really great example of what you said, combining the objective with the subjective, the qualitative with the quantitative. So before I ask you more questions, I also want to say congratulations for getting this done. I understand you had the help with getting participants from the Bear Pantry, a few professors, and the Marcus Garvey Cultural Center.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Now, could you tell us what were your findings and what challenges did you occur, if any, and how did you overcome them?
Well, I'll start with some challenges first. The challenges, I mean, writing the proposal as undergrad, we already have all these other responsibilities. So McNair is like training us to do all that at the same time. And that was the challenge, just trying to get the proposal done. And my research is so like intersectional. So it was kind of hard, like, you know, I had to narrow it down because I wanted to look at different cultural groups across campus, but don't have time for that. So I had to narrow it down. But luckily at the end of the semester, I got everything figured out. And my IRB, which is like interview review board, it's like your proposal has to get approved if you're working with human participants. And so luckily I only had two things I needed to correct. And so I was able to start recruiting participants right away. And participant recruitment wasn't like that bad. It was just towards the end, you know, when the semester is about to end. It got hard, you know, towards spring break, but luckily I got all of them done. And so right before, you know, quarantine started. So I was happy about that. And then what was the other thing you asked?
Well, what were your findings? What was it all for? No, you're good. You're good.
So a lot of the findings show that, you know, a lot of the students that I interviewed cared about the environment. A lot of the females, participants cared about the environment. A lot of the, gender oppressed individuals say like they gender or, participants that identify with the LGBTQIA community, they cared significantly more about the environment, environmental concern. They showed more environmental concern. And that was the thing when I was looking for research, like looking at the gender aspect, I was trying to see if any research has been done about those in the LGBTQIA community. And I couldn't really find anything. So it was like really important to include their voice because a lot of people think that environmental concern just has to do with race, when it's just like there are more components to one's Black identity rather than just the color of their skin. Aside from that, a lot of other findings show that a few participants said they wish information to like conservation practices and all this other stuff were more accessible, and like also representation, because like one of my participants stated, you know, his mom would always force him to go to like really fun trips to like Yellowstone National Park because his uncle was like a park ranger there. But he felt like, you know, he didn't want to be there because he didn't see as much representation. And then I had another male participant talk about how sometimes when he's out in nature, he doesn't like how, you know, white people look at him funny because it's just like he's wondering what they think about him being in those type of settings. The participant I had that identified as transgender stated that if we're going to make change to like gain a stronger affinity towards the natural environment, we need to learn how to fight for everybody's rights, Black transgender rights, Black female rights, Black male rights. It can't just be Black male rights. It has to be everybody in the community. We all have to be on the same page before necessarily moving toward, you know, focusing more activities, I guess, environmentally related activities in the environment.
Absolutely. I concur that. And I'm glad that you said that. I mean, better representation of non-binary individuals, I think, is key when we're talking about who needs to be at the table in the new generation of conservation. And changing the face of conservation, you know, is, like you said, it's more than color. You know, it is definitely lived experience that is needed to help inform the future of conservation. So I'm glad that you did this research and, you know, you had great participation. And again, congratulations on getting it done. So I understand the Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth inspired this project, and you took a sociology class that focused on environmental justice. So I wonder, what was it in psychology that brought this really important finding for folks in the environment?
Well, when I took an environmental justice class, there are just a lot of things. Like, I obviously can't cover everything, but the thing that stuck out to me the most was just like people of color obviously deal with, they suffer more from climate change than any other group, people of color, impoverished, low-income areas, you know. And I was just like, wow. But, and then, you know, in Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, you see that he has a presentation. And I think it's important to mention this. Like, in the first one, I mean, he's gotten better. But in the first one, I remember I had to write a report on it. He was saying, like, you know, to focus on the, it's time to focus on the environment. We've basically already solved, you know, sexism, racism. And I was like, okay, nah, like as a white man, you don't.
He said it was over. It was just as over as that.
Well, he was just saying like, you know, we've already solved those issues. We've focused a lot of energy on those issues when given today's situation, that's not true. And he was like, now we have to focus on the environment. And it's like, do we even have that luxury to pick and choose what we want to focus on? Because especially in the United States, we don't normalize having conversations about race. And it goes back to like, how are we teaching history? How are we teaching history? We can't just teach it from one perspective and we can't teach like one snippet of it. And so it goes back to history. And then also in that documentary, you see that, you know, he's going to different countries and these countries have different disparities they're dealing with. Like they have like a lot of hurricanes, bombings. And then there's one more thing. I can't remember, but like there's a lot of disparities wherever he went. And like, he was trying to show this presentation and it was like, okay, like people don't have the luxury. Oh, it was war. That was the third one. People don't have the luxury of, you know, focusing on climate change and, or like focusing on, you know, his presentation when they have other issues that call for immediate attention in their environment. And so that's where my research came in. It was just like, you know, trying to look at the why people care about the environment, why Black people care about the environment. Because like a lot of research has established that yes, Black people do care about the environment, but it was kind of like, yes. And then like, let's move on. But how do you move on? Like, all the studies I've looked at are quantitative. And so I try to do this from a qualitative approach.
And that is very much appreciated. I think that you're making a very good argument for the need of intersectional identities disaggregated in environmental conservation research. And it's awesome that you're doing that in undergrad. And, you know, I definitely want to wish you the best in the future that you can, you know, secure, you know, confident funding to produce more of this. If, you know, should that be your passions? Should that be your passions more? I understand you have a lot of different interest, you know, and it could lead you anywhere. I know that you said that you like GIS programming, land management, urban planning, environmental law. And I think that that is so cool that you can have all these passions and find ways to intersect them to really support a bigger point that's going to help everybody.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. After doing this project, it's kind of like, just getting my toes wet and like for the first time with research and, you know, doing something that was personal for me and can also help people in the field of environmental sociology and psychology understand, you know, there's more to environmental concern than just race. And so I think a lot of different interests I have can help, you know, in one way or another address environmental justice issues.
I would love to see it because the science you do is the policy I think folks will advocate for. You know, when people are talking about what we need to change legislatively, it and they're on the right side of history here, they're normally coming with a background of science saying that, hey, race has played a determining factor in the health outcomes for the people in this zip code. And it is especially hard for folks who are non-gender conforming, and it is especially hard for Black women, and it is especially hard for poor people. And we have all the data here that tracks exactly what we're saying. And this needs to be a public mandate for what we need to do to address environmental injustice where we see it.
Exactly.
So this coming summer, I know that we are now in May and, or excuse me, wow, we're in June. What is time? And I think everyone has experienced the questioning of time. And in that question, you know, a lot of folks are wondering about the times that we're in to see if this is going to be the moment of the revolutionary change that has been building up in the corners of our country, or is this going to be a simple blip in the memory of U.S. history? I wonder what is your perspective right now, seeing this as an undergraduate student, getting ready to enter? I mean, I think you've always been in the real world, right?
Right.
But entering a world where you're no longer supposed to be in school anymore, you know, where you're no longer being asked to turn in assignments and things like that. What world do you think that you will graduate into?
You know, it's hard to say given, what's going on right now. I hope I graduate into a better world because I graduate in December. But, you know, with this pandemic going on, I hope it's gone by December. Time will tell, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with, you know, all these injustices with police brutality and all that other stuff. So I'm not positive that the pandemic will go down, being that all the human contact. But I hope the justice aspect is figured out by then, because that is one thing in the United States that just needs to happen. Like, we just need to normalize again having those conversations, being uncomfortable and all that other stuff. Because if we can't be uncomfortable, how can we expect to grow as a country? And so I hope to graduate, you know, into the real world of a more just world.
Wonderful. And I hope that you have a role in shaping it. I know that you'll also be looking to work on creating a safe space on social media for Black folks in academia. I wanted to give you a head start on that and suggest Black AF in STEM. They're mm-hmm. the organizing group behind Black Birders Week, and that includes me as well, part of the folks that help bring it together. And I, you know, hope that not just you, but you can find also your fellow Black colleagues to invite them to help build this, because, you know, we have a lot of attention right now, but we need a lot of help organizing. And I think the more folks that get their hands on this, the more folks we can lift with it.
Yeah, for sure. And another project I'm working on, I just set up the Twitter today. I'm like figuring it out. I'll send you the information for that later once I get all the account stuff.
I understand.
Twitter's being a little complicated right now. So I'm like, all right. But it's called Black Academia for You. And so like what I want to do with that, and I do want to work with Black in STEM. And like the backstory to it is I just want to ask like everyone in Black and STEM AF so many questions, but it's just like, there's like 101 of us that are involved in that. And I think I don't want to dilute the experience of, anyone. So I just want to be able to not only have that for myself, but share it for other people who want to go into higher education, you know, undergraduate, they don't mm-hmm. know what an institution is like and what the Black experience. And so I want to use that social platform to kind of give people, you know, a perspective of students already in those fields at those universities.
Nice.
And I think that's really important because I didn't have that going into college. And I just want to know a lot because, you know, it's funny, a lot of universities on Twitter are getting like exposed for being quote unquote allies, but then mm-hmm. not acknowledging this experience of their students. And so I just think it's really important to have that for Black students. And with that, universities can use that as a tool to like refer to see how they're doing when it comes to like addressing racially related, gender related topics or issues.
I definitely believe that institutions that hide from transparency or that don't have a transparent process to decision-making or oversight, I think that you'll see issues there. You'll see issues of those institutions making those statements without any action and then no Right. recourse for a lack of action. You'll see those institutions make these really high and important statements, get all the popularity for it, and Yep. they will go back to business as usual. They're not as interested as changing the face of conservation as they just are as changing the topic. And it's disappointing to see that, especially when you feel that you believe in institutions. But every one of my intelligent friends has told me, do not believe in institutions. Institutions Wow. are not meant to be believed in. And that's why there needs to be institutional structures, kind of like Jackie Chan's grandpa in that TV show everyone watched on Saturday mornings. Magic must defeat magic. Institutions have to be defeated by institutional structures. And the culture of racism that we interact with interpersonally is part of the culture of an institution, yes, but the racist structure could be built so that it excludes marginalized communities, or right. It can be explicitly anti-Black in its practices, or it has a policy of protection that perpetuates white supremacy.
Right.
And you hate to see it.
Yeah. I agree with what you said. I think a good way to determine whether institutions are, worth investing in is just their actions and like allyship. Because I notice like a lot of these institutions that people are calling out, it's just like, first off, you can't be a part-time ally. That doesn't work like that. It'll never work like that. No. And just because you're not racist doesn't mean you are, contributing. You have to be anti-racist. You have to be anti-racist, and you have to be willing to address, what you can do better as a white person to make life easier for people of color. Mm-hmm. And so that's just what I've noticed about institutions, and like people are even calling out professors like, didn't you do this? And I'm just like, oh, yikes. But it's just like, you can't be a part-time ally, and people just want to get a piece of the, the fame. And it's like, okay, like, what? It doesn't make sense to me. You think that by now people would want to do better and want to see the better side of things and just hear the perspectives of their students of color, but it's almost just like a facade at this point.
Yeah, that's very disappointing. I don't think that those challenges are made easier when those institutions are ready to take action. They right. often disproportionately burden people of color with the corrective action. And it's almost like, hey, we want you to change something. And then they just say, hey, change it yourself. No concern. Yeah, of support, no concern of the amount of resources you needed. And, I think that definitely speaks to the experience that my mom shared with me, what has been the Black experience for her. And that's been cooking a 3-course meal on a 1-pot stove. And I didn't really understood what that meant when she told me that, because we always grew up with 4 burners on our stove, and I would cook with her all the time. So I was just like, I always help. What do you mean? but I, older now, I understand what that means. And it really hurts to see that in reality, and knowing that she's faced that and, but has the Black experience has shown us, there is resilience, there is strength, yeah. there is pride, there is joy. And that is, as part of the Black experience, I would say maybe more so than what the national conversation may have you believe as it's only trauma.
Right.
Or only sure. protest, and I think that protesting is a sign that these people haven't been heard. We haven't been heard. Or if we're being heard, we keep repeating ourselves, and nothing frustrates me more than repeating myself. I think that there's an opportunity for tremendous progress, but as cynical as I am, I know how that progress can be taken away. So I am very interested in seeing how institutions will change their structure to make and to lead to the outcomes of an equitable, more just, more inclusive, more diverse, a future that has more access and leadership for marginalized communities, especially people of color, especially Black women, especially folks that are non-gender conforming. I think that's all going to be very important when we look at what do we need to do to fix the problems that we have.
Yeah. And I'll say that, not every institution has done a poor job, because there's definitely a few institutions or programs within institutions that I've seen the professors are actively speaking out, actively doing what they can. And like the students there under those professors feel like they're being heard, or they have the representation in order to feel like they can relate or just open up to professors and have those safe conversations.
And that is very important. Now, your experience at UNC, what has that been like in general? Not just, you know, answering, I'm not asking you to answer as a Black woman on campus, but as just as a student, you know, I know that you're born and raised in Colorado. What's it like being at UNC in Greeley?
So for me personally, I have been given a lot of opportunities and I'm thankful for them, every single one of them. But, you know, going back to the Black woman aspect of things, I think it could be so much better. And, or just like black woman, person of color, I think it could be so much better, especially like within the biology department.
Yeah.
Because from what I've noticed, I feel like I can't find a sense of belonging because, you know, it's nothing like, you know, Louisiana or the East Coast where you have more Black people or more like a higher Black population. And so I was the only Black woman who was studying ecology. And it was hard because I didn't have anyone else to relate to. Wow. And they were just two distinct groups, like pre-med. I mean, there's other emphases, but from the people I've interacted, it's just like pre-med and ecology. And I just couldn't fit in because pre-med, they're always competing with each other. They're always competing with each other. And I feel like they're taught to compete with one another. And ecology is the same. Everyone's like more chill, but it's just like, you know, hippies and all that other stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like, I don't personally identify with that. I just literally want to do, I just want to learn more about animals and then also be able to have open discussion about race and the inequalities people of color deal with within departments like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very unfortunate. And, you know, I think that there needs to be structural change in that. And it's unfortunate that, you know, to some degree, some folks are just, they're just swimming with the tide, right? They're swimming with everybody thinking that this is, you know, the right way to do it. But honestly, folks are, you know, cutting themselves off at the legs if they can't find ways to be supportive and cooperative, especially in college. I think college is a really good way to learn your communication skills, you know, in a lot of ways. Now for our last segment, we are going to do one word for wildlife. So one word for wildlife is kind of like a pun where we say in literally one word for wildlife and then onward, because we want to think that we can be in a better place with conservation. So if you could have one word for wildlife, what would it be?
Sustainability.
Wonderful. Now, do you want to go into that? Oh, I mean, if you'd like.
Sustainability, people, power, planet. Those are like the three tenets of sustainability. And so I think wildlife, especially studying it, should, consider all those three things. And especially the people part, like who's doing the research, you know, what methods are you using, all of that stuff. And so will we be able to really study wildlife or take care of the planet and distribute the power if we're not, you know, including all people? And so that's my perspective.
Thank you so much for that mic drop. my one word is revolution. Mm-hmm. And I think about that structurally. I think about that culturally. And I think about that presently in the context of where we are today. Hoping and working for a better tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that.
Well, thank you again, Joelle. We want to have you on again sometime soon.
Okay, thank you.
You have a good rest of your day, please.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.